Morning, everyone. Thanks for coming out today on this great National Day of Reckoning. I'll front load with an apology for my voice. I have a little bit of a cold. it's one of the ironies of living the academic lifestyle that I spend so many days in isolation reading quietly whenever it's time to come out and talk to people. I get a cold. So today I'll be presenting a small bit of data from a larger field experiment, and while I'm pontificating, I guess I'll play this. Now let's go. Just to be hip, I threw in a drone video here. I'll be presenting today a small bit of data from a long-term organic vegetable cropping system rotation trial that myself and my colleagues, to back up. I'm Graham Baird. I'm a PhD candidate at UC Santa Cruz. My advisor is Carol Shannon, and I work in a lab there in the Environmental Studies Department. This is our farm on the UCSC campus, and at this site on the left, you can see that field in strawberries in this video. We've been conducting a long-term organic rotation trial, and I'll be presenting some data from there. I think I can skip the rest of this. But there's our beautiful campus. You're welcome to come visit and contact me if you want to. I'll show you around. It's a great place. So this field trial that we've been conducting is currently in year 5, and we've been comparing rotation systems. In this context, there's organic farmers in the region typically rotate between 3 primary crops: that's strawberries, lettuce, and coal crops. And there's a few primary factors that influence this rotation. One is their desire to go back to strawberries as fast as they can, because that's the moneymaker in the system. And the other is the secondary tier of wanting to go into lettuce if they can't go into strawberries, because that's a more profitable crop. And so this rotational field trial was designed with this in mind, thinking of a few different scenarios that growers might be cycling through: one of a 4-year rotation, one of a 2-year rotation, and with 2 different types of dominance of crops in the system. So one with lettuce dominant, brassica dominant. And on top of this, we threw in a lot of pest, pathogen treatments, and I'll be talking today about the fertility treatments and the data that we got from that, from this trial. On top of all of these rotation and rotation crop selection treatments, we also applied these fertility treatments, were essentially revolved around 3 main factors, and that's the use of a leguminous species in the cover crop over winter, or use a cover crop at all. The alternative meaning just the use of a straight stand of cereal rye, the use of pre-plant nitrogen amendments, or not, and the use of in-season nitrogen side dress, or not. And these all kind of basically reflect the general practices of growers in the region, where some completely eschew the use of in-season amendments and completely rely on leguminous cover crops to provide in-season nitrogen, which is a great system, and some are more interested in the stability or the yield increase that's afforded by in-season side dress. So we wanted to represent all of these kinds of systems. This resulted in about 16 unique management types that were repeated 4 times across the year. And unfortunately, the models weren't quite cooperating for presenting the data here. So I'll just be showing you the data from this specific field trial. But you should know that we designed this in the mother-baby type field experiment design. We took 4 subsets, 4 treatments from this main field trial, asked growers to choose which 4 they wanted, and put them out on actual growers' farms in the region, 6 different sites across 3 different counties, and then tested them alongside the growers' practices. So we also have these 6 sites. And they ended up choosing this 4-year rotation with a lettuce-dominant series. So again, lots of data collected, lots of analyses ongoing. We're in year 5 of the experiment, and we're still kind of getting a hold of the numbers. But today I'm just going to present some data on some thoughts that we had on in-season nitrogen dynamics, specifically with pools of inorganic nitrogen that we saw develop in all of these systems, and how we might be able to control them. And this overall approach was stimulated by our view of the nitrogen dynamics in-season at all of these sites. This is a sub-selection of just the mother trial, which is the UCSC farm site, and just the nitrate data. And we saw these usual peaks, which aren't surprising, of the kind of usual residue incorporation, mineralization, uptake, and mobilization patterns. And, of course, these are all point estimates graphed here, right? So that they're means, and means lie. The standard deviations aren't here, but they're huge. And if you compare across treatments, or if you'd expand to multi-site analyses, essentially it's just so difficult to find a pattern. And there's, as the field trial progressed, all these things were interacting and building up so that the crop residues are being incorporated, and those were leading to more and more crop residues in certain treatments. And essentially each plot was its own management system and resulted in pretty hard to interpret data. So we saw this same trend of, even in these pretty well-managed systems, this gigantic pulse of post-incorporation mineralization of nitrogen and this pool of inorganic nitrogen that's vulnerable to loss and that could be available for either gaseous losses or water transport losses. And it was pretty concerning. So we wanted to figure out, you know, how can we get a handle on the shape of this pulse? And to back up a little bit, specifically, these pulses were happening in vulnerable periods. It's not surprising that in the summer we'd have a pulse because some of the treatments were side-dressed, but this plot shows the 80th quantile of inorganic nitrogen concentrations in the soil. And you can see that in our Mediterranean climate, there's these two kind of overlapping periods of rainfall, so uncontrollable irrigation in the system, and these pulses correlating with crop incorporation. The most concerning one being the latter part of the season. So the first one is this pulse of nitrogen from the cover crop incorporation. The second being the pulse of nitrogen from the cover crop residue incorporation, which is typically not considered to be a major problem by most of the growers in the region. You incorporate, you plant your cover crop grows and takes up most of the nitrogen. That's the theory. In this case, the pulse of nitrogen that was happening was usually well in advance of cover crop seeding, and it was partially coinciding with the onset of fall rain. So these pools of nitrogen are highly vulnerable to losses. And we wanted to figure out, you know, what are the ways that we can control the magnitude of this pulse? What management strategies could a grower be using to manage this pulse? And later on, although it's a question that I wasn't really able to address with this model type, is it's going to move the location of these peaks, this kind of classical uptake plant requirement problem. So we've been using, working with a team to use these more bottom-up mechanistic models to try and figure out what management strategies could be predicting these pulses. But I also wanted to take a more top-down approach, and this is an approach pioneered by Jason Kay's lab over at Pennsylvania State University, using a machine learning approach. By the end of the 5 years of rotation, we had about 2,000 data points of observations, all correlated with the management types and the crop residue incorporations and the fertilizer nitrogen load and all of these different parameters. I wanted to figure out, you know, how can we link these stochastic variables from year to year, where 1 year we would have lots of volunteer mustard that would completely change the profile of the cover crops in certain systems, and other years we would have plant growth reduced by certain weather conditions, and those would all change the dynamics. How can we actually get it time this apart? So completely threw away the traditional factorial split dot spot design that the entire field trial was built around, and just treated every single data point as coming from its own management system, and then fed it into this big machine learning model. I won't spend a huge amount of time talking about the model itself. I'd be happy to talk more to you about it offline. But it's this model called a random forest, and it's an ensemble-based learning algorithm where it takes in the data and then makes random partitions using trees that look like this to classify the data into bins according to which environmental or management parameters could be used to predict mineralization or the size of this pulse. And using this method, we were able to explain about 55% of the variance in the test data set that we fed to it. So it was a decent, you know, not great, but it did enough to say, okay, maybe we're looking at something here. And the output of this kind of algorithm is that it spits out at you what are the management or parameters or the crop parameters or the environmental parameters that are most important to predicting these nitrogen pulses here. And it ends up showing us that it was the previous nitrogen, pure nitrogen burden of whatever crop residues and fertilizers are being put into the soil at the incorporation event, the seed-to-end ratio of those residues, so nothing surprising here, the moisture status of the soil at the time of incorporation, the baseline nitrogen, a legacy effect of what the soil organic nitrogen matter was, and then some environmental parameters like the cumulative precipitation and irrigation for 15 days ahead of that sampling event, and the temperature, and then some the current crop and the fertilizer. So controlling for these and producing some model predictions what are the actual management and environmental responses that we can see from this? And so I tested the expected range, the range that we saw in the model, and that's really what Alpha got learned from in this data. So, for example, and again, not surprising, as the crop residue CN increases, the size of the pulse in the resulting size of the inorganic nitrogen pulse goes down. That's fine. As the prior nitrogen load increases, the size of the pulse also increases concomitantly, right? These kind of uncontrollable parameters, as the baseline soil nitrogen, so the total nitrogen in the soil, even after the 5 years of treatment, this kind of parameter of what was the soil characteristic like before we even started the experiment was still dominating the size of these pulses and carrying through the entire data set. And then again, precipitation, irrigation, maybe this is a leaching effect where the higher levels of precipitation irrigation you had before sampling, the lower the nitrogen would be. The temperature increase makes sense from the mineralization point of view. The soil moisture, I'm not exactly sure how to interpret. So what this kind of gives for us is an idea that there's lots of different points in these systems where we can control the resulting pulse of nitrogen coming from these incorporation events. And it could be modifying the actual system itself. So in the case of the cover crops, before the cover crop residues are incorporated, carefully selecting a mix of cover crop species so that the C-N ratio of the resulting residues are calibrated to a certain level, and then controlling those residues as they're incorporated, maybe in a variety of management strategies. Specifically concerning was the really huge pulse of nitrogen coming from the incorporation of the either coal crop or lettuce residues at the end of the season. And there could be any number of management strategies that we could incorporate in these systems to control it. Some collaborators right now are working on an idea of, especially in systems where they don't have cover crops that perform any of the catch crop roles, incorporating high carbon materials to the system immediately after incorporation to try and bind up, get that carbon cycle flowing and bind up the nitrogen into the soil. But overall, staying aware of this idea that the nitrogen loading during the season could result in higher nitrogen residues. And so even in these organic systems where presumably our losses are lower than if we were using mineral nitrogen fertilizers, if the nitrogen load during the season is high enough and the resulting residues of the crop are high enough, we could get really substantial pools of vulnerable nitrogen, and it's worth considering the trade-off between yield and how much nitrogen is left in the residue materials on the ground. So there's all these different points that could be manipulated in the system with this knowledge in mind, and controlling staying aware of the nitrogen load, controlling and staying aware of how soil moisture and temperature can affect all these mineralization patterns. In future directions, we're hoping to extend this data to not just predict the magnitude of the pulse, but to predict the timing of it and the spread, and maybe to build it all together into a measure of a per-system asynchrony and trying to get an idea of what these actual losses could be in many of these systems. Okay, thanks.
There is time for a question.
Yeah.
There is a lot of variability. What would you say the average nitrogen application rate for vegetable growth in the area? And then, is there anything coming up or already on the books as far as encouraging regulation mitigation of nitrate, the marketing of herbicides, which can help with this situation?
The nitrogen loading in this system, I'm completely spacing on that. I'm going to blame it on the cold. That was a plausible load, considering that some growers simultaneously use cover cropping with legume. So there's the loading from that, plus compost, plus feather meal, which it becomes substantial. Yeah. And for the second question as well, I'm not sure. Yeah, I think a lot of the legislation around the nitrogen losses would mostly be around some work that's going on right now to link greenhouse gas emissions to nitrogen losses and regulating it from that point of view.
We won't have time for any more questions, maybe after the session ends. So thanks so much.
Thank you.